The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
Hey, this is Sean Aiken from OneWeekJob.com, and you're listening to one of my favorite podcasts, The Disciplined Investor.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, your host for episode number 40, and I am pretty excited to be a part of your lives for the year 2008. I am not excited about how the market has been treating any of us, and in fact, I am pretty perturbed about the fact that, I feel a bit lied to. Truth of the matter is, this countrywide Bank of America fiasco and the entire housing situation is enough to make anybody really second think what is the point of being involved in these markets for the first place. Because if you can't trust the information and the material and the analysts and the presidents and board of any of these corporations, what else do we have to go on in order to invest properly? I don't know that answer these days because it's pretty frightening because the news out there is pretty thin in terms of what I can consider excellence in broadcasting. On the last podcast, we had Paul Kudrowski. If you hadn't had an opportunity to listen in on that, you should take an opportunity to go over to iTunes or your favorite podcast directory and listen into that interview. And interestingly enough, I found out that Yahoo is coming out with a brand new portal for video. They're going to be having original shows, and Paul is one of the co-hosts of the show. There's going to be three people involved that are the main guests and hosts of the show. And it seems that Yahoo is going to be trying to compete with CNBC, which is really interesting because for the most part, the mass really get their information not only from the web, but when it comes to television, you're really looking at CNBC. Even though there are some of the other players out there like Bloomberg and even Fox Business, which has been slowly but surely doing nothing, it seems, CNBC is really the place to go. And with that in mind, you still question why it is that we haven't seen a lot more hard-hitting and a lot more smashing of the heads of the people who have been clearly telling us a few things that aren't so much in line with what has gone on. Way back in July, I was complaining and really pounding the desk about my concerns about liquidity. As a matter of fact, I went back and I replayed a conference call that I did for clients in 2005 when I had mentioned in 2005 that I wanted all my clients to go out and get themselves a line of credit. And at that time, they thought I was nuts. Why would I ask them to go get a line of credit? Because, you know, the fact was that everything was great at the time. And I explained to them that I felt that in the next few years, there's going to be such a shortage of credit. There's such going to be a liquidity crisis that they should go get a second line of credit on their house, if you will, a home equity loan. Don't use it. Sit on the side with it for a while. But thinking ahead, it made a lot of sense because if there was going to be a credit crunch, they at least had the availability of that to do what they wanted to at the time. Not that they would use it, but if they wanted to do so in the future, there'd be no way to get it. Well, there is a credit crisis on our hands right now, and that is now leading into what seems to be a recession, and that is a very big issue. That's a concerning factor, and when Goldman Sachs comes out with an announcement that there is a recession squarely on the horizon, you have to wonder whether or not something is known that we are not aware of. And when the same day Bernanke comes out with an announcement that he's going to reduce rates by 50 basis points and stand at the ready, realizing that the inflation situation is not as important as saving the economy, you got to scratch your head a little bit and start waking up to there is some problems.
Listen to what he had to say.
Monetary policy has responded proactively to the evolving situation. As you know, the committee cut its target for the federal funds rate by 50 basis points at its September meeting and by 25 basis points each at its October and December meetings. In total, therefore, we have brought the funds rate down by a percentage point from its level just before the financial strains emerged. The Federal Reserve took these actions to help offset the restraint imposed by the tightening of credit conditions and the weakening of the housing market. However, in light of recent changes in the outlook and the risks to growth, additional policy easing may well be necessary. The committee will, of course, be carefully evaluating incoming information bearing on the economic outlook. Based on that evaluation and consistent with our dual mandate, we stand
with that in mind. Over the last number of months, people have been asking me, hey, Andrew, how come you haven't come out with any stock tips, you know, or at least haven't come out with a lot of stock tips? I think the answer to that is pretty simple. I mean, bottom line is that you know, over the last several months, we have been actually taking money off the table and not wanting to put good money after bad, because when the tide comes and that wave comes on the beach, you can be the greatest surfer in the world, but when the tidal wave reaches epic proportions, you're going to get knocked down. There's no way you're going to be able to ride that wave. And to be very honest, there's no reason to ride that wave. And that's what's happening with this market right now. So we've been putting a lot of money on the sideline. We've been investing in things like the shorts on the Qs. We've been investing in some of the preferreds, which while they did go down for some time during the time when there was a huge amount of speculative crisis going on with the fixed income world and the credit quality issues that were imposed because of the lack of beneficial oversight of the MBIA and the various credit boards. The fact is that they dipped, but they came all the way back. As a matter of fact, accounts are squarely even, plus the 6.5% to 7%. There's a post on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, that goes over some really good preferreds that are at the 15% tax bracket, and you can look at that. There's also a post on the Bank of America and the Citibank, Countrywide issue, the new Bank of Countrywide, I guess it's going to be called, and some of my discussion about that and some of the comments I have about the players involved there. As well as next week, we're going to put up some really great screens and a how-to on the screens. I believe that will be next week. So that's all that's going on. And finally, two things coming up is Brian Shannon. He is a great technical analyst because if you look at the markets from any aspect, even in the bad times, you really want to utilize technical analysis or charting when it comes to entry into the markets. Because when you look at the markets from any perspective, you have to take the longer view approach and look at historical trends, and that, no better way to do that than with charts. Brian Shannon from alphatrends.net is going to be here, and I'm going to interview him, talk with him, and he's going to share with us some of his ways of actually looking at the markets and hopefully give us a particular stock to look at. We'll have that on the show notes as well. And beyond that, we have a new segment for the show. It's called The Squeeze with Real Money's Jason Raznick, and what that is going to be is a great opportunity to find some stocks that may have a real upward punch, where we find stocks that have been really beaten down by either shorting or selling, or and we look for something that really is about to pop, because the short sellers will really get, as we say, squeezed if in fact we see a move on the upside to the stock. So Jason's going to come on board and maybe give us a few tips, so stay tuned for that. And that's all coming up here today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey, you know, lately I've been asked many, many times about if I'll ever teach a course and do an online discussion. You know, everybody has said that they really enjoy the book, and of course that's available at Amazon.com, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success. But you know what? We teamed up with Cyber Trading University, and if you want to have me teach you a little bit about the ins and outs of investing and some pro tips, we're going to be doing a free workshop very soon. I believe it's on January 31st. And it's all online. You're actually going to have an opportunity to have me come right to your computer if you want, in fact, to sign up for that. Again, it's free. It's an introduction course. And you go right to our website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I'll show you exactly how to do it. It's very easy. It's very simple. And I think you'll enjoy it very much. So join me in a class that will teach you all about the professional tips and mastering your investments and your portfolio. All right, as promised, we are in for a special treat today because a good friend of mine, Brian Shannon from Alpha Trends, is going to be talking to us and walking us through some technical analysis and charting. So thanks for joining us today, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Andrew.
Listen, so, you know, a lot of people have different impressions about what charting is all about. And why don't you start and tell us a little bit about, first of all, how you got started in the whole idea of charting and investing using technical analysis, and, you know, what do you do on a daily basis with it?
Okay, well, that's a lot of questions there, so let me take the first piece, which was, how did I get started with it? When I was probably, I think, a senior in high school, I used to read a market newsletter. I don't know if it's still out there, called the Cabot Market Letter, yeah, written by a couple of guys out of Boston. And something that they had written in there really struck me interesting, which was, there was a company, I remember it because it was one of my first trade that really got me hooked on trading, which is a company called Advanced Polymers. And the symbol was APOS, by the way. It's long gone. But anyways, they the capital letter said, if this stock crosses above $5 a share, then we like it. And it was about $3.90 or something. I was thinking, well, why on earth would you wait for the stock to go up to $5 before buying it? Why wouldn't you just buy it now? And then they had a chart there, and it kind of just looked obvious to me that if it broke past that level on the chart. So it really piqued my interest in technical analysis. So I picked up a copy of Stan Weinstein's book, Secret for Profiting in Bull and Bear Markets, which is really just lays it out nice and simple. And that really got me hooked. Then I started using daily graphs, chart books when I was a retail broker, because they combined the technicals with fundamentals in there. And it's just been kind of something that's evolved since then.
And that was the time before there was, I don't want to date us here, but that was before the internet was as popular as it is now and before you had instant access. So you had to kind of wait sometimes to the end of the day for certain charts and to really do the analysis, right?
Sure. Well, the daily graphs, I would get the blue and green book. The blue was right. New York Stock Exchange, and the green one was the NASDAQ. And they would send those to you. You'd get them on a Sunday morning with your Sunday newspaper delivery. And I would spend most of my Sundays, flipping through hundreds and hundreds of charts.
Wow. So, boy, there's a lot of big change to where it is today. I mean, today it's amazing what you can do. It kind of, have you ever compared what you could do today to what those books are? I'm sure you have a few of those laying around still.
Well, it's interesting the way that the market has evolved because of the internet. I think that, even the concepts in that book of Stan Weinstein's, and that book I think was written maybe in 1982 or 3, if I remember correctly. But he would talk a lot about the 30-week moving average or the 150-day moving average. And right now, I think the 150-day moving average, especially for the type of active trading that I do, is really irrelevant. But the concepts are the same. It's just that these computers have gotten so much more sophisticated that we can now look at charts using 1-minute bars or candles or even tick data, that you can really get down and analyze it so much on such a closer level that the concepts are still the same on all the different time frames. It's just it opens it to more opportunity based on what your personality is. That is, which time frame do you want to look at? And when we have a market that's as volatile as it is right now, all the uncertainty on the longer term time frames, you can make a little bit more sense of, I think, of the shorter term trends by drilling down to shorter and shorter time frames.
But does the market being as volatile as it is now, do the rules still hold? I mean, can you go by the rules that you use every day with this current market, or does you have to change the whole process?
That's the great thing about technical analysis is I haven't changed anything I do except focus on shorter time frames. Once you understand, support, resistance, trends, volume relationships, moving averages on the daily time frame or the weekly time frame, it's just it's what they call fractals, is that you see the same recurring patterns. Fractals are in nature. You also see them in the stock market, that you can see a cup and handle on a 1-minute time frame develop and actually trade it and use your stops based on what you see on that 1-minute time frame, if that's the time frame that suits your personality.
So a couple, you mentioned a couple with a handle. So that's, I remember this. It was one of the first things I learned when I started reading William O'Neill's books. He was, he's a big believer in that. I don't know if he's the quote unquote creator, but he was the one that really pushed it out to being a very important charting pattern. So why don't you, we're going to have a lot of these. And as I talked to you about earlier, we're going to have a lot of these on the website for download. So anybody that wants to actually download this particular podcast, the notes from it, if you will, we're going to have a package. So explain to us as you see what a cup with a handle is all about and what it means.
Yeah, the cup and handle, like you said, was really popularized by O'Neill. And really what the cup and handle is very similar to what you might even call a lot of people might confuse it for an ascending triangle. And that is that there's a certain level of resistance. So I'm going to try and explain a scenario. I can't think of one off the top of my head right now, but if you had a stock that kept coming up to the $50 level, let's say it hit that $50 level back in October, and then mid-December it hit 50 again, And now in January, just so we had 6 weeks between the first test, 4 weeks between the next test. So what that's showing is that the buyers are able to come back up to that level of resistance on a more frequent basis. It's taking less time for them to kind of regain their momentum and come back and test that resistance level. What's happening underneath the surface is that we see that that first test of $50 level, the stock might have pulled back down towards $47, found support, and rallied up. The second time, it made a higher low near, let's say, 48.5. So not only are the buyers getting more aggressive in terms of time that it took 6 weeks, then 4 weeks for them to revisit that resistance level, but they're getting more aggressive price-wise. They're not waiting for the pullback to 47. Now they're buying the stock at 48.5, if I remember my numbers correctly. Mm-hmm. But they're making we're seeing higher lows, which is indicative of buyers becoming more confident in their purchases before they regain control of the short-term momentum. And we're seeing them become more confident as well based on time. So the two forms of risk in the market are price and time. And when we see that those risks are becoming diminished, it leads to a greater likelihood that we're nearing a point where the buyers can gain that control and push it past that resistance level, that the supply, whether there's one source of supply from a big mutual fund or a couple institutions, each time the market tests that resistance level, that level of supply diminishes, obviously. And the sellers run out of supply, then the stock is free to break out past that level and continue higher.
Right. So now, you know, one of the things that when I look at technical analysis, you know, in my book, I wrote a whole chapter on explaining what is technical analysis and why is it used as a core discipline for investing. And when I look at technical analysis, I use it as like the chart is talking to me. You know, here's what I think. The fact is that when you start talking about resistance levels, I say, hey, there's a level that people are okay with selling at. They are saying, you know what, I'm not going to sell unless it hits this level. On the other side, you talk about support levels. You're saying, hey, you know what, one of two things. Number one, I can't take any more pain. I'm going to bring it down to this point. And the other side is, you know what, if it ever hits this point, I'm going to buy in. And if you could understand, at least my opinion, when you could understand the mentality and the psychology behind the buys and the selling out there, I think that's where you start to profit. Would you, you know, how do you feel about that? Is psychology involved here?
I think the whole market is ruled by psychology. What's the significance of a PE ratio unless people assign value, you know, some meaning to it? Same thing with a chart. I mean, does a moving average act as support? I mean, is there some kind of magical force field, you know, around a moving average? No, but it's just perception that, let's say, the 50-day moving average is watched by a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, or which came first, right? I mean, is the fact that the moving average is what people are looking at, or is it the fact that there's a certain price they're looking at and just happens to create a moving average around it?
Yeah, exactly. It's all about perception. If enough people believe that a pullback to a 50-day moving average is a good place to stick in their bids, they create more demand there. Also, you have an institution that says, hey, we've got to trim this position down. Let's sell it. But, you know, once it gets down to that 50-day moving average, let off the supply because it usually finds support there. So we have, you know, also short sellers that are always in the market who might be saying, let's short it down to the 50-day moving average. So what we have is if the big institution reduces their supply near that 50-day moving average, the shorts lay off it and actually turn to buyers, and then we have sidelines cash come in, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The only reason it's important is because there's enough perceived value there that people have changed their opinion about the value of it, and it just, you know, it's a way of assigning a little bit of order to chaos.
Mm-hmm.
What technical analysis right. is really all about.
So tell me some patterns that you look for. What is it that, you know, I know a lot of technical traders have their favorites, and I'm sure you have an arsenal of your favorites that you really try to utilize.
You know, I'm really not much of a pattern type of guy. I don't, you know, actively seek out cups and handles or ascending triangles or head and shoulders patterns. What I look for is trends, and I look at multiple time frames is really the key to what I do. And what I think that everyone ought to do is you can't look at it, you know, time is measured. If I tell you, you know, call me at 2:00, you're going to say, well, you know, that by itself, that means nothing. What does that mean? is it today? Is it tomorrow? Is it next week? What year? AM, PM? And the same is true when we talk about trend. Trend is ambiguous without any time reference. So when we look at the market, we want to look at, first of all, start with the longer term time frame. Now, again, that depends on your definition. For an investor, the longer term time frame will be found typically on a weekly chart that goes back maybe 5-6 years. Then, a day trader, the long term time frame might be on 30-minute price data bars or candles that goes back 5 or 10 days. So what I like to do is first I identify what I consider to be the primary trend based on a chart of the daily time frame that goes back about 150 days. From there, if I see a solid trend, either higher or lower, is irrelevant. But if I see a solid trend that I think is, likely to continue to move in that in the direction of the primary trend, I'll then drill down to either a 30 or 60 minute chart that gives me about 15 to 25 days worth of data.
Wow.
On that time frame, I'll look for what I consider to be the key levels of support and resistance. So if I'm looking at a stock I consider to be a potential long candidate, I want to see, has the stock pulled back and established a short-term level of support, and where do the buyers regain control? Once I've identified that point, then I want to maybe set an alert and identify where my stop will go in case I'm wrong, and is there enough potential reward? Where is the potential supply going to come into this to slow this uptrend down? So can I come up with a justifiable risk-reward ratio? And once I've done that on the 30- or 60-minute time frame, I'll then look at the 5- and 10-minute time frames to just kind of get a little bit better fine-tuning on that swing trade. I'll set my alerts. Let's say I think the stock's going to be a good short sale if the stock breaks below $38 a share. Well, I won't set my alert at 38. I'll set my alert at 38.05 or something like that. So when I set my alert at 38.05 and the stock trades there, my software will alert me that it's reached this level that I've determined to be important. I'll pull it up on my screen and then start monitoring the trade-by-trade activity and just kind of look at a couple more time frames, look at other stocks in that industry, maybe see if they're breaking down, and then decide, okay, if I do sell the stock short, what's my worst-case scenario first? If mm-hmm. I'm wrong, how much am I willing to accept in terms of risk?
Right.
If it's pretty close by, then I'll pull the trigger and, hopefully the stock, hopefully the FBI comes in and raids the headquarters. They gap the stock lower 10 points the next day.
So you don't have a hardcore rule of not holding overnight or anything, because I know that a lot of traders that I work with and talk to in terms of day trading, they will not hold overnight under any scenario.
No, I don't have any rules as far as that goes. It depends on the market environment, though. This year, in 2008, I haven't held one stock overnight. It's been all day trades.
Right.
But when we have I'm more willing to hold a long trade overnight when we have a good uptrend, because the shorts, you can just get these vicious opens where they squeeze you out. But it's not up to me to impose time restrictions on when a stock should move. What if I do decide to hold a stock overnight or for a few days, I'll look to see if there's any potential catalyst. I'll look at the headlines and see, are they due to report earnings, or is there any conference that might be up around the corner? There was recently a biotech conference. Well, I don't want to be involved in those names because I really don't know anything about these companies for the most part.
Right, sure.
And I don't want to take the time to put into learning about them, because every time I confuse my opinion with what the market is telling me, the market wins. The market doesn't care what I think.
Yeah. Let me back you up a little bit, because there's something you said that I think is kind of interesting. And for everybody out there who wants to trade, I find so often the biggest mistake that they make is really not understanding one key point, is that they need to understand the market, like you said. But you said something that I think is so pertinent, is that if you set a price target, let's say at you see it going to, let's say, 16, you set your alert to 16.05 or 16.10, the whole number game, whereas most people out there are setting their sell stops and their buys to a whole number, you can get around that by just, you know, moving outside of that range, right?
Without a doubt. And those numbers are there just kind of as a guideline for me too. I, you know, when I establish a price target, it's where I think the stock has the potential to go before it's likely to meet a source of supply that might halt it. So if my stock that I buy at 25, I think the target is 27.50. If it rallies up towards 27.50, I'll probably peel some of the stock off. But at the same time, I want to let as much of it ride as possible so that if it does continue to move higher, that I can participate in the larger game and gains. And I'll look at, you know, what is the definition of an uptrend? The definition of an uptrend is higher highs and higher lows.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll look at is a short-term time frame, maybe a 5 or 10 minute time frame. And as long as it continues to make higher lows, I'll kind of use that as my stop level. So I can listen, like you said, listen to the market, listen to the message of the market, understand market structure, and that the, you know, resistance is only known after the fact. Support is only known after that fact. It's a potential resistance level at 27.50 that I might be targeting for this trade. But, you know, my opinion is just based on my analysis, and the market does definitely not always agree with my analysis.
Right. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, I want you to take me through an actual discussion of a stock and of a pattern, if you will. And we'll post that on the website so people can follow along at home and kind of play the home game, I guess. And then I'm going to ask you about some of the software and sites that you really like for that. So stick around for a second, all right?
Okay.
All right, hang on. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
All right, we're back and we're talking about technical analysis and charting with Brian Shannon from Alpha Trends. And Brian has a great site at alphatrends.net, and I'd really suggest that you go over there and subscribe to his work because he gives some great advice. So, Brian, tell me, take us through one scenario. Take us through a stock pattern. And again, we're going to post this on the website at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. In the notes, we'll have a PDF so you can download it and follow along. So give us a rundown of a particular and a pattern about a stock.
Okay, here's a stock that looks as though it might be setting up as a potential good long candidate. I don't have a position in it yet, but it's possible I'll take one here in the next day or two. And the name of the company is Acorda Therapeutics, symbol ACOR. Now, I'm going to tell you, I have no idea what this company does. It's probably some kind of biotech or something to do with therapy.
Right.
You know, we're in a downtrend, and that makes it, I think, you know, just generally long trades a little bit riskier. So it's potential. There's the potential that if I do trade this stock, I might just buy the options instead, because if the company has news and I'm unfamiliar with what they do and it gaps lower, well, then I can, you know, precisely define what my risk is in advance by using the options instead.
Right.
But let's talk about the stock, like you said. So if we look at a daily time frame, and if you could look at one with, you know, maybe since about July of last year, what you'll see on there is that there's been a level of resistance at about 21.5 or so. And just about, what day is this? Looks like about December 24th, it broke past that level of resistance. Now, it's since pulled back to that level of prior resistance. So, you know, one of the basics of technical analysis is resistance once broken tends to act as support. Now, that's a nice little phrase that a lot of people memorize, but if you understand the dynamics of what's happening in there, it makes it a little bit easier to understand. So, like we were talking earlier about the psychology is key here. And, you know, if you think about a stock that's at near highs, who would potentially buy this stock? Well, one thing I like to look at a lot of times is, because it's quick and simple, is I look at short interest for a stock. And what I like to do, I can shoot you the link for this, Andrew, is on the NASDAQ site, they have an area where you can look at the short interest. Now, for a quarter, the short interest as of December 14th,
which, by the way, let me just interrupt, means that how many shares are short of the stock, and the potential, and getting one step further on that is, okay, what's the opportunity that if the stock starts going up, it's going to be in a short squeeze situation, and people are going to start buying because they just have to.
Right.
So it's
number of shares sold short and not yet covered. And for this stock, it's 3.5 million shares. Now, that's a big number for a stock that trades about 200,000, 250,000 shares a day. So another warning there is it's a fairly thinly traded stock, which makes it riskier. So you've got to really control your share size and that sort of thing. But if the shorts were to get out of it, be motivated for some reason to cover their position all at once, it would take them 19 days of average volume to get out of this position. So in effect, they're buying could have a very significant play a very significant factor in driving the price higher. What's more interesting than the actual number is that as of June 15th, the number of shares sold short was just 1.2 million. And since June 12th, the stock has traded underneath that 21.5 level. So now we look at the stock and say, the short sellers added 2.3 million shares under $21.50 a share. So when the stock breaks out past that resistance and it pulls back, if I were short, I would be thinking, well, here's an opportunity for me to get back, you know, to get out of this position at a break even, basically. So I think that they're going to be in there supporting the stock a little bit. That's one potential source of demand. Of course, it's a little bit of guesswork, but if we can understand what price they sold short at, we kind of know their uncle point, and that can play a big factor in the upside.
Then I like that, the uncle point. I like that. That's great.
Yeah, it's like, you know, bending your fingers back.
Yeah. Again, uncle, right? I am with you.
So now you look at, you know, throw some other technical things on here. We throw a 10, a 20, a 50, a 200-day moving average on there. You can see the stock is holding above the rising 20-day moving average. The 10 is above the 20. The 20 is above the 50. And that 50 is crossing up through the 200-day moving average. So what that tells me is, you know, a moving average is nothing more than a mathematical trend line. And it's telling me that on this time frame, basically all trends are higher because all these moving averages are higher. So the buyers are clearly in control. And that's got to make those short sellers pretty uncomfortable here. So the stock, when we look at the daily time frame, it's just consolidating in around this 21.5 level. So what I'll do, like I said, next is look at a 30-minute time frame. When I look at a 30-minute time frame that goes back about 15 days, you can see that as of the 24th, it made a high at about $23.50 a share. On the intraday time frame, it started making a series of lower highs and lower lows right up until it reached its low on the 7th at about $20.25. It broke past an intraday level of resistance at 21, made a higher high, and now it's pulled back, and that $21 level was tested yesterday and again this morning and seems to be holding its support. What I'm looking for in this stock for an entry now is a move above the high at about $21.75. If it gets above there, it shows me that there's another higher high, and the worst case stop in this case is, if I was looking at a swing trade, would be under that 21.25 level. So I see this 21.25 level. So I could buy the stock at about, let's say 20. Let's say there's a little slippage. It runs fast in there, and we get filled at 21.80. Then the stop would go at 20.75. So a little less than a dollar. If you look at the year high for this stock, or the 52-week high, rather, you'll see it was up at about 26.5 just back in May of last year. Mm. So there's this potential source of demand from the short sellers. We've got a stock that's breaking out. It's holding on to the gains in a down market. So if the market can turn around and start heading higher here, this is the type of stock. It's not a market leader by any measure. You know,
no, it's not even a name that most people probably even heard of.
And that's kind of the beauty of it. You can find these little ideas that just set up really nicely on the multiple time frames that they're not, you know, they're kind of immune to everything that's happening with these buy and sell programs and subprime stuff and the dollar and gold and all that. And my decision whether to buy will be, does it exhibit the strength to move above this recent high at about 21.75? If it does,
right,
then what I'd really like to see is that maybe it runs up to 21.75 again, pulls back to 21.25, and then breaks out. That way I could put my stop underneath that 21.25 level rather than
right,
way down at 20.75.
So essentially, you're looking for confirmations. You're looking for something that gives you some kind of reasoning why it makes sense to do so, to give you that flow and that behavioral understanding of what's happening. And all this is really kind of speaks to you in the chart.
Absolutely. It's what I call trend alignment. I'm looking for the trends to be aligned. I want to catch it as it starts to enter a new trend on a short-term time frame. The long-term trend is nothing more than the sum of a bunch of short-term trends.
Mm-hmm.
But short-term trends lead the market. If I can enter an established bigger picture trend on the shorter-term timeframes, then I can participate in that big unfolding trend and using, again, the definition of higher highs and higher lows, but on a shorter-term time frame, I can really control risk. And that's really what it's all about. And that's where a lot of people miss the boat, is that they're not controlling their risk.
Yeah,
they're saying, well, I think it's a good company and I like their product, and the market doesn't care what you think.
Exactly. Let me I want to skip over to that. That's great. And again, we're going to have that information on the website for you, everybody, to look at. I have a question, and I don't want to put you on the spot about this, but I do have a question about, there are a lot of, late night television style commercials and infomercials that are always pressing this. It's kind of the, here's a great way in a box for you to make money. And without actually, saying the names of any of the companies, not getting any of us in trouble, but, they say, all you have to do is watch this, and it tells you when to buy and when to sell, and, just watch for the information. What's your take on those?
It's good.
I think I know the answer before I even ask it, but I thought I'd ask it anyway.
If I was to stumble in the door late at night and looking for entertainment, it might keep me interested for about 5 minutes. I think it's kind of sad, actually, that those people are putting that out there. I mean, trading is not easy. The concept of trading is easy, and the dream of it is something that everyone wants to do and be good at, but it takes a lot of hard work and understanding of really understanding market structure, understanding psychology of the market, and the way that supply and demand is affected by so many different factors. There's not one little magical box that's ever gonna make you rich. It comes down to understanding market structure.
It's hard work. It's work. It's not a get rich quick scheme. It's interesting. I think I've mentioned this before, and I don't know if I talked to you about this, but I had a real life situation where a friend of mine was starting trading, and he wanted to understand, one of these kind of trader in a box style programs. And he, and as a matter of fact, I chronicled this, and in one of my chapters of my book, I talk about it in real detail, about how he went for about 6 months learning everything that he could, really trying to understand the whole dynamic of this whole program, and spent, I can't tell you how much money on all the things he was doing and the seminars and the add-on programs. And then what he did was, through the whole time, it was paper trading, or was pretending to trade through, not a live situation, making $30,000, $40,000 per month. And he showed me this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The month that he went live, the first month that he went live, utilizing the exact same parameters, information, and techniques that he did for the prior 6 months, he lost about $60,000.
Ouch.
That's a true story. True story.
Yeah.
And he said to me, Andrew, what am I doing wrong? I said, well, I told you not to do this to begin with, but what you're doing wrong is you've learned how to buy and sell according to signals, but you've not learned how to determine whether those signals are solid. And you've also not looked into liquidity factors and looked at, really what was going to be, a good stock to buy or bad. You talk about Acor, ACOR here, where they have a certain amount of shares to be. You can't trade a million shares a day in that. You're going to move the stock all over the place. He didn't realize this.
Right.
Therefore, when he got into a few stocks and he tried to get out, he couldn't at any price.
He kept on going down
every time he hit it.
Right. The market impact cost of his actions was working against him.
Exactly.
For not realizing the liquidity, which is, you know, which is just another one of those little subtle things. What's the average daily volume? Well, you don't go into a stock like that with 10,000 shares and think that you're going to be able to day trade it or you know, trade it for a couple of days. It just
exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right. So let's finish up with telling us what sites you like, maybe some sites that have some great tools, and aside from yours and mine, of course. But, you know, where else do you find good charting software or techniques, or, you know, what could people look at?
Well, you know, I'm not a big reader of other information out there. And I hope that doesn't sound, I don't know how it sounds, but I've learned to rely on, you know, my analysis of looking at the market and trusting price. The more I read news stories and let my mind become influenced by something that's going to make me feel as though I have an edge, I've been led down the wrong road too many times.
Right. What you're saying is it's experience. It's not just looking at something and just mimicking. It has to be part of and parcel of your long-term experience is what really is more important.
Right. And it's so it comes down to, you know, what do I listen to? You know, first and foremost is price action. That's the only thing that's ever going to pay me is price. So that's what I spend 95% of my time looking at. There are some real good blogs out there that I do, you know, peruse. But if they mention a stock, I look at it, but then, you know, decide whether it fits my risk parameters. And that's something that, you know, that your friend needed to understand as well, is that, you know, there's a lot of recommendation services and that sort of thing out there. But do they fit your strategy? And, you know, is there not a one-size-fits-all in the market. But to answer your question, I think that Howard Lindzen's blog, he's a good thinker. He sees a big picture, and he's a trend follower who listens to his own intuition. He understands when the market's getting overbought and knows when to cut risk. And when things are down a whole bunch, he'll get into a longer-term trend just based on he's got a real good feel. There's a guy called the Fly, and his website is it's R-rated, so just so your listeners know that. But it's iBankCoin.com, and I like him because, you know, he's a little bit probably too opinionated for my style, but he's a real trader, and I'm attracted to people's sites who are actually in there trading and putting their money in the market. So that's what I really like to look at.
Charting sites? Something with, you know, where you can actually utilize their charts, like a stock charts or MSN Money Central, or I don't know, anything that you like.
Well, the trading platform that I use is Realtek, and that has all my charts built right into it, all my order execution and market minders and that sort of thing. If I didn't have that, I think that I would probably use a combination of a couple sites out there. I like Big Charts because they have volume by price, and that's a real nice tool that just kind of tells you what price the volume occurred at, so you get a better feel of, you know, how much supply and demand is, you know, has entered the market at a certain price level. I believe that Stock Charts has that tool as well, but it just seems a little bit easier to use, and you can use intraday time frames over big charts as well. But I really don't have much need for those sites because I have the live, tick data in front of me.
Right. And we use something for our clients and for trading. It's called CyberTrader. It's a division of Charles Schwab, and it's probably a similar situation with a level 2 system with all the charting software that you can handle.
That's their main competitor, Realtek, I think. So they're very similar.
Well, the good news is they're not available for the retail client anymore. Are you aware of that?
I did hear that, yeah.
Yeah, they pulled, which I don't know where the wisdom is in that. I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. But so maybe Realtek will pick it up. So, well. All right, well, listen, we're going to make sure to have the information on our website and in the notes for this podcast about where people can find you and how to get to you and listen to your various podcasts that you put out. What is it? It's daily, obviously. You put out some charting system, a video every day. And we'll make sure to have that. Also, stay tuned because Brian is now going to be on iTunes, it looks like. So that's kind of cool also.
Yeah.
So, well, it's great having you. We'll talk real soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Andrew.
Coming up, The Squeeze with Real Money's Jason Raznick.
Hey, Jason, so tell me about what's a short squeeze and explain to us what you know you look for and how it can be profitable.
Short squeeze is when there's a lot of shares short in a stock. So there's an outstanding float, and you look at the float. You try to find stocks where the float is short. That is short is over like 10%, 15%. But really, the key thing is on a short squeeze, there's a thing called a short ratio. A short ratio is the number of days it would take someone to cover a short position. So if they were short the stock, so for example, there's a stock called Epic, which has a short ratio around 18 or 19. And basically, if that stock started to appreciate because of some positive news or a catalyst that you know made people want to buy the stock, the people who wanted to get out of their short position would have to buy back those shares, therefore covering their short. And when that happens, they consider it a short squeeze because it takes so many days for those people to get out of those positions to cover all those shorts. You've seen there are a lot of short squeezes on positive news, such as a buyout, or there's going to be something called a short squeeze. People, you know, trying to get out of their positions or buying back the shares that they were previously short.
All right, so it's like kind of almost like a panic buy versus a panic sell, and that pushes the stock up dramatically. And if you find the right stock that has these very long days to cover, it could potentially be a good candidate for a short squeeze because then, and again, a short squeeze is you're looking to get an upside move because people are going to be rushing in and it's really not enough overall volume and liquidity to on the market, and therefore it pushed it. So give me some ideas on some stocks that maybe we should be looking at.
There are various companies I've written on Real Money. I wrote about a company called Itron.
All right, good.
Volume decreased on the stock. I wrote about it because I thought there'd be some positive catalysts coming out. A lot of municipalities are trying to cut down on costs and utilities and trying to become like a green efficient companies. And so Itron does the meter reading stuff, and they keep track of it, and it's automated, and it's a huge cost saver for these utilities. Mm-hmm. And so they're starting to be getting new contracts. Another one that I was on is Fortress, which is that FIG, which is the private equity hedge fund company. It was at 36 or 34 a few months back. Now it's trading down almost 50% or almost close to 100%. 50% trading on. Yeah, I think it's around $16. It has a short ratio of 18, so that'd be 18 days to cover. There was an insider purchase made in November. Not a large one, but it's the first purchase since the IPO. These guys are some of the right. best managers in the industry, run by Wes Edens, the main guy from Goldman. So I wouldn't count them out, and I think there's an opportunity to get in this undervalued play, and they also have a nice dividend as well. And one other one I guess we can mention is Epic. It's EPOCH is how you spell the company name. Symbols EPHC. It has a short ratio of 26.2. 11% of the float shorted. They're like an asset manager. They are very focused on cash flows, whereas most people look at like PE and earnings. They don't believe in the accounting numbers. They really focus in on cash flows, try to outperform the markets, which they have done. They were founded in 2004 right. from some Credit Suisse right. guys. And their assets under management just increased by, I think, another 10% or somewhere around there. So those are a few different plays. I write about different plays a few times a week, so just as they come up, and then you just and they're not long-term trades. These can be just like a two-week trade where you see an opportunity with a catalyst like an
earnings. So we'll put some links on the site where people can read your work, and that's great. But we'll make sure to keep those in mind, keep watching those, and I'll put some charts up on the show notes of these and some information on the shorts, and then we'll kind of follow these. And I'm glad that you're with us because I think that the short squeeze is one of the plays right now in this kind of market condition. So that's great. Thanks for doing the episode, and we'll look forward to many more of your great stock picks.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on. Thanks again.
That's all we have on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 40. If you want to pick up a copy of my book and get the free audiobook, like I said, the free offer is still standing. Just go to Amazon, buy a book, and leave a review and let me know at reviews@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. In addition, if you're interested in that course, Mastering Your Portfolio, Take a look at what we have to offer. It's a free course introduction at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll give you all the information in order to sign up. Make sure you do so soon because it will fill up fast. I promise you that. We only take, I believe it's about 100 people into the class. So go right there right now, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Take a look at the free class and we'll make sure you get signed up. And have a great week and be careful out there. There's going to be a lot more volatility. I assure you of that. We'll speak to you soon. Have a great week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.